Deutsche Welle, Africa Link.
Tuesday, the 3rd of January 2017. Hello and welcome to DW's Africa Link program, coming to you live from our studios in Bonn, Germany. I am Jane Ayeko Kumet.
And I'm Wanjiko Mwaura, and I'll be telling you what's trending on the different social media platforms.
In today's program, Nigerian government hikes duty tax on luxury and consumable goods.
Whether the import duty is increased or not, prices are increased every year, and it is affecting the common man. So the government is also taking a step to boost their own revenue base.
Hopes for peace talks in Syria dealt a blow as opposition claims that government forces continue their offensive in the water-rich Barada Valley.
The peace talks are not going to happen as long as the military opposition, the Syrian military opposition, is not part to these negotiations.
And we'll be looking at your opinions on the stories in this show.
Stay with us for all these and more, but first let's listen to what is happening from around the world.
I'm Mark Caldwell with the DW News. A number of Syrian rebel groups say they are suspending talks about planned peace negotiations because of what they describe as ongoing government violations of a four-day-old ceasefire deal. Opposition factions have been angered by a continuing government military offensive in the Barada Valley, northwest of Damascus. Peace negotiations between the rebels and the government were due to be held in the Kazakh capital of Astana later this month. In Mozambique, rebel leader Afonso Glacama has announced a 2-month ceasefire in the conflict between RENAMO and the Frelimo government. The ceasefire is an extension of a week-long truce, which was welcomed by the country's president Filipe Nyusi. Glacama said the ceasefire was intended to build an atmosphere conducive to advancing talks between the two sides in the capital Maputo. Clashes between the government and RENAMO have revived the spectre of Mozambique's civil war, which ended 25 years ago. Migrants have barricaded staff inside a reception centre in northern Italy in a protest over living conditions there following the death of a young woman. The woman from Ivory Coast apparently died of natural causes, but fellow migrants reacted angrily, cutting off the electricity supply to the centre, starting fires and blocking the exit, leaving 25 staff members barricaded inside. The protest ended in the early hours of Tuesday morning. Separately, around 112 migrants were rescued by a Spanish vessel from choppy central Mediterranean waters on Monday after drifting for hours in a rubber dinghy whose engine had failed. This rescued Liberian migrant struggled to put what he had experienced into words.
I was so afraid. I told her that today I'm going to live in this sea. I was afraid.
This news comes to you from DW in Bonn, Germany. The chairman of Gambia's Electoral Commission, Alio Momar Najai, has fled the country because he received threats after declaring President Yahya Jammeh the loser of the election on December the 1st. It was not known where he might have gone. President-elect Adama Barrow won the vote and Jammeh conceded defeat, but he said later he would not step down, drawing international condemnation. A computer problem at the United States Customs and Border Protection Agency hit several US airports on Monday, causing long lines and delays at immigration checks as travellers returned from the New Year holidays. This traveller in Boston was among those who were held up.
The machines were broken, the green cards weren't working. It was a mess in there. I don't know. Took forever, hour and a half maybe to get through the whole thing.
The agency said there was no indication that the disruption to service was malicious in nature. For more news and information, please visit our website dw.com. I'm Mark Caldwell.
This is DW's Africa Link program with me, Jane Ayeko Kumet.
And I'm Wanjiko Mwaura.
We start the program from Nigeria, where the federal government has raised import duties on luxury goods and consumables up to 70%. The government says this is part of the efforts to promote local production. Some affected goods include yachts and sport utility vehicles imported into the country and consumables like sugar and salt. Muhammad Alabin has been finding out what people make of this, and his report is now presented by Crispin Mwakideu.
The Ministry of Finance circular reached the Nigeria Customs Service at the start of this new year. Foreign goods that previously had an import duty of 10 or 20% would now fetch higher fees in an effort to promote local production. Sugar and salt would now have an import duty of 70%. Alcohol, tobacco and rice would now pay 60%. Also included on the list of items that would face higher import duties are packaged cement, textiles and cars. Luxury goods such as yachts, boats and SUV cars are also affected. Nigerians reacted differently on this increment. Umar Baba, a political analyst, believes the new policy may trigger a rise in the prices of some consumable goods if the demand for them is met locally.
One of the disadvantages of increasing duties on commodities is the prices of commodities will increase. So there has to be arrangements, there has to be plans on ground on how to, face the challenges that will come as a result of these increases. In my opinion, Buhari has to consult experts before embarking on a policy.
Aminu Sule Wuro Boki, a resident of Gombe, also expressed fear over the possible rise in prices.
To be precise, this issue, it requires rethink. With this new policy, common man can hardly afford such product coming from abroad. Even the one in the country that is our own, common man is battling to get it.
And Umar Adamu, an economist from Gombe State University, says the policy has nothing to do with price increase in the country and is good for the nation.
Whether the import duty is increased or not, prices are increased every year, and it is affecting the common man. So the government is also taking a step to boost their own revenue base instead of allowing the business people to be importing these commodities illegally and still increase the price.
Essential industrial sector accessories such as bowls, industrial oil and other equipment, however, enjoyed a downward review to spur local industrialization. The cut in the import tariff on items for industrial use may encourage entrepreneurs whose industries had previously shut down due to the high duties paid on imported components.
A report by Muhammad Alamin in Nigeria. Now, hoping against hope, in Syria, 10 rebel groups say they were suspending talks about planned peace negotiations, citing government violations of a ceasefire deal. They claim that Syrian government forces carried on their offensive in the water-rich Barada Valley, northwest of Damascus. The ceasefire brokered by Russia and Turkey is supposed to be followed by talks later this month in the Kazakh capital, Astana. DW's Terry Martin has been speaking to Adnan Haddad in Gaziantep, Turkey, and works for the opposition radio station Hara FM, which broadcasts within Syria.
The ceasefire has been announced, but honestly, what we have seen on the ground, all the reports that we have been receiving confirm that the regime troops supporting militias, the Iranian militias, still conduct airstrikes and still conduct offensive on rebel-held areas. This is mainly seen in an area called Wadi Barada, which is towards the eastern countryside of Damascus. We have also seen violations in Daraa and Idlib, and other areas where rebels still exist. So the short answer is the ceasefire is nothing but a lie, it seems, that the regime is trying to promote with its allies, with Russia and Iran.
So it seems the ceasefire is not holding. Peace talks between rebel groups and the Syrian government are supposed to take place in Kazakhstan later this month, brokered by Russia and Turkey. What are the prospects for those peace talks taking place now?
The peace talks are not going to happen as long as the military opposition, the Syrian military opposition, is not part to these negotiations, because so far so many parties claim to be representing the opposition, but they don't actually have any control on the ground. So even if they agree to the negotiations, they cannot stop the war, because simply they do not control the guns on the ground. The opposition that is represented by the military faction, who still exists in Syria, has decided not to go because simply they do not see the ceasefire that Russia and Iran and the regime is claiming to have agreed on. They don't see that happening, despite the fact that these opposition groups have signed to these agreements, most of them at least have signed the agreement to the ceasefire, and they stopped their aggression or they stopped the attacks or military operations against the regime and against the militias supporting the regime. So on one hand, they try to basically commit to any international agreement that's being sponsored by Turkey because it's their main supporter. But at the same time, they don't see the other side, which is, as I said, the regime and its allies committing to this, to the agreement that was forced against them by the Russians.
Terry Martin speaking to Adnan Haddad in Gaziantep. Now, in the Democratic Republic of Congo, various parties have today been holding their first talks on how to implement the landmark deal on the country's political future. The deal was brokered by the Catholic Church and defines the end of President Joseph Kabila's 15-year presidency. Ziprangeri reports.
It was clear from the onset that it would not be an easy transition when the Congo Constitutional Court ruled in May Kabila could stay in power even without being re-elected. Days after the landmark deal on the New Year's Eve, there have been questions on how and if it would work. The Secretary General of the opposition's MLC Movement of the Liberation said they refused to sign the agreement because there were no guarantees that the government would respect the deal. Evers Basaiba, the Secretary General, MLC Movement in Congo.
The only guarantee they gave us is the direction of the Comité National de Suivi, which is practically regarded as a political police. In addition, we fear that all those who will sit in the government will use deceptive excuses, such as financial hardship, technical or logistical problems, to not comply with the deadlines by 2017.
Under the deal, Kabila will stay in power until elections are held at the end of 2017. A transition body comprising 28 members will also be set up, headed by the 84-year-old opposition leader Etienne Tshisekedi, and a prime minister will be named from the opposition ranks. Kabila's constitutional mandate ended on the 19th of December, sparking protests that left at least 50 dead and scores injured. The church had to step in and defuse the crisis, brokering a deal between the opposition and the government.
Ziporangeri reporting.
And now straight to your comments on this story, starting with Christopher Mshuza, who says congratulations to the church for the good work they've done in facilitating these talks. We also have another comment coming in from Ruben Muzaliwa, who asks, when do all these talks end? We are tired of talks that do not bring any solutions.
That's interesting. There seems to be lots of talking everywhere in Syria, in Congo, in almost everywhere there's lots of talking.
Indeed. And, well, we are yet to see if the situation changes in all of these places where talks are continuing.
But at least the church did a good job in brokering peace talks. I mean, we see some bit of calm in the DRC. I'm pleased to say so.
Indeed. And we hope that they sustain this peace that they are currently enjoying. We also have another comment from Dixon Josphat, who says, justice can only prevail in the talks if God is in their midst, because African leaders are difficult to deal with.
Good observation in there. Remember, those are opinions from our social media page, and you too can comment on those stories on our DW Africa page on Facebook. Wanjiku, what else do you want to say?
Well, we have Jonas Saidi Mwaya, who asks, President Kabila, don't you see your stay in power is the cause of conflict in your country? And further, we also have Enoch Kagela, who says the AU should advise President Kabila to step down earlier so that Congo can remain peaceful.
Anyhow, AU, EU, UN, everybody always does advice, but the leaders have to take the decision on their own. Thank you so much, Wanjiku, for that. We will get back to lots more of your comments, but for now, we will go on. But first, a quick break. We'll be right back. In case you've just tuned in, this is DW's Africa Link program straight from our studios here in Bonn, Germany, and I'm Jane Ayeko-Kumet.
And I'm Wanjiko Mwaura.
Still to come, how to deal with traumatized asylum seekers from Syria.
I think it's extremely important that we work with refugees because we speak the same language and share their culture and background.
Cameroon national football team has been hit by hard news just a few days before the Africa Cup of Nations.
We shall get back to that a little later. But isn't it not expected of our leaders to honor their commitments, no matter how difficult, expensive or inconvenient they are? Well, maybe not. Or maybe just it is enough to change the context. Burundian President Pierre Nkurunziza just did that. Having said he would not run for presidency again come 2020, now he says the statement was made in a different context. So he will run again, should the population demand so. So how have Burundians reacted to this announcement? Apollinaire Ninirora has been finding out and now reports.
Will he run again in 2020? The question was put to Burundian President Pierre Nkurunziza during a live radio program on Burundi National Radio and other local radio stations. President Nkurunziza indicated that citizens have the last word on whether he will be a candidate for his own succession. If citizens ask him to run again, he will obey.
If the citizens decide that the national constitution must change, if they say that person X is allowed to run the race without breaching the law and the people request it, we will not betray the country and its people.
In Burundi, the question of political succession remains a delicate one. In 2015, the country was plunged into turmoil when President Nkurunziza announced that he would be the candidate for the presidency after 2 5-year terms in office. Nkurunziza's controversial third term in 2015 sparked violence that left over 500 killed and over 300,000 people exiled in neighboring countries. In response to the president's radio interview, some residents in the capital Bujumbura have told DW that they were disappointed to hear such a statement, as he had made a promise that he would hand over power in 2020. They fear that the country's situation will worsen.
Many people are afraid of his power. We have many refugees out of the country, and also you've seen that he has competed alone. To mean that if he comes again in 2020, there's a risk to be alone. I think that the crisis we are living in now will continue without any end.
If we refer to the situation prevailing today, so many things are getting worse and worse. If we refer to poverty, non-respect of human rights, killings which are being observed here and there every day.
He is a liar. As he said, I will never run again. And now, if citizens choose me, I will accept. So, if it is democracy, why doesn't he give up the next presidency?
In September 2016, a UN team of investigators reported a widespread violation of human rights in the country since the start of the protests against President Nkurunziza's re-election. Nevertheless, some citizens believe that President Nkurunziza is a good leader and that he should remain in power.
We, the citizen, what we want is peace. If President Nkurunziza has decided to stand for another term, for us, we need peace in the country and good leadership. And if majority of the people vote him, that means people are happy about his leadership.
If he's really a good leader, if he's believe in himself that he's a good leader, then no problem.
During the live radio program, Nkurunziza said that the promise he had made to hand over power in 2020 was made in a different context. He added that Burundians would have the power to change this through an amendment of the national constitution. A commission mandated to update the national constitution is to be set up to work on suggestions made by citizens during consultations organized by the National Inter-Burundian Dialogue Commission.
Apollinaire Ninirora in Bujumbura. And just on Sunday, Burundi's Environment Minister Emmanuel Ninyonkuru was shot dead by an unknown gunman.
Africa on the move.
Cartoons have not always been popular in Burkina Faso, but since French Burkinabe cartoonist Damien Glens founded the satirical newspaper Journal du Jeudi in 1991, cartoons have found a place in the Burkinabe media landscape. That's logical for a country with one of the highest illiteracy rates in the world. The media landscape in Burkina Faso is particularly free. Even after the fall of Blaise Compaoré, many newspapers observe some kind of self-censorship. Gelen Volma met up with Burkinabe cartoonist Hamidou Zotaba. Her report is now presented by Isaac Mugabe.
Trained strokes, catch impressions and punchlines. That's how cartoons drawn by Hamidou Zotaba look on the front page of the Burkinabe weekly Economiste du Faso. His cartoons mostly address issues that have to do with social inequality. He explains how Burkinabe men from different economic backgrounds usher in the new year.
We give him a rough direction and he draws the cartoon entirely on his ideas. At times we're surprised and tell him it's simply great, but when it oversteps its limitations, we tell him it doesn't fit.
At the morning meeting with the editor-in-chief, the topic for the front page of the weekly newspaper is decided within minutes. It's about corruption.
Everybody is enjoying themselves. The first one is drinking traditional brew. The second one is from the middle class. The third gentleman is the classic one.
Zotaba can't make a living entirely on his cartoons. The newspaper Economiste du Faso pays him roughly 15 euros for one cartoon per week. And so the 37-year-old father of two earns extra cash working as a decorator. For 7 years, he has been building a fantasy palace for a local chief 150 kilometers away from Kudugu. The cartoonist says he has designed the palace with culture in mind.
Day by day, we lose a bit of our culture. Through images and sculptures, we can show our future generations what happened here and what is left as history.
Zotaba designed a significant illustration program in the ceremonial hall about the peaceful coexistence of ethnic and religious groups. He goes through the designs with the sculptor.
The chief and three religious representatives, a Muslim, a Catholic and a pastor, come here. And then we'll make an animist.
Back in the capital, Ouagadougou, the deadline to submit his cartoon is getting closer. Zotaba intends to depict corrupt administrations as sport champions. But after a call from the editor-in-chief, he must throw that idea away and come up with something new. He explains how and where he gets his inspiration.
I do not like to work inside a room. I like to move freely. Nature inspires me because in it, I find answers to the questions that bother me.
Zotaba is, of course, not entirely free to draw whatever he wants. The newspaper that commissions him sets some limitations. His second proposal was accepted. But editors have to first give the green light before the newspaper readers can decide whether Zotaba has once again hit the nail on the head.
A report by Gerlin Volma.
Focus Europe.
Many of the asylum seekers who have arrived in Germany come from Syria. The evacuation of the city of Aleppo has brought countless pictures and videos depicting the harrowing experiences which civilians have gone through in the past 5 years of war. Amid the ongoing debate about immigration here in Europe, it is easy to forget this suffering. And while not everyone is traumatized, many refugees here are in dire need of psychological help. Arabic-speaking psychologists, psychotherapists and social workers are scarce. But a new project is trying to change that, as Naomi Conrad reports from Berlin.
Berlin Spandau. An elderly woman clutching her walking frame inches along the pavement past a boarded-up beauty salon and the nondescript blocks of flats that line the road. This quiet residential neighborhood seems very far from the hustle and excitement of central Berlin. But after months of separation and anxiety, it's become home for Ali Ajoub and his wife, Mary Atfe. Just over a year ago, Ali Ajoub was desperately waiting for the German authorities to issue a visa for Mary, who was still back in Salamiya, a Syrian city close to Hama. Fighters of the self-proclaimed Islamic State were inching ever closer, and a friend of theirs had just been abducted by IS fighters in a nearby village. In the end, the visa came through and Mary Atfe, a petite brunette with long wavy hair and a ready smile, joined her husband in Berlin. But even now, thousands of miles from Syria, it's hard to escape the war.
Ja, natürlich, wir immer sprechen über den Krieg,
With my friends, we always talk about the war. When I listen to the news, I hear many terrible stories from Syria. As a psychologist, I want to try and help people come to terms with what they've been through.
Mary, a psychologist who worked with children with autism back in Syria, is one of 12 refugees who are being trained to work as mental health counselors for fellow refugees who experience the trauma of war and destruction. Michael Webers, a cheerful, down-to-earth man, runs Komrum, a small drop-in counselling centre housed in a beautiful old villa in Berlin. Last year, when Germany opened its borders to more than 1 million refugees fleeing the turmoil in the Middle East and beyond, Webers soon realised that organisations like his simply didn't have the necessary staff to deal with the specific needs of refugees. Counselors, that is, who speak Arabic and understand the refugees' background and culture. That's why he and a Syrian colleague of his came up with the idea of training refugees from the Middle East as counselors.
Wir hatten in unserem Auswahlverfahren natürlich so bestimmte Fragestellungen. Wir hatten
We asked them what kind of values they held, what kind of ideas they have when it comes to the role of women in society. And we also asked them how they would react if one of their patients had been on the other side of the conflict.
The fears, he admits, proved baseless. The students were desperate to learn and take up jobs. The first batch of 12 are set to start a 4-week internship, having almost finished the 3-month crash course, which included classes on issues like crisis intervention and depression, but also an introduction to Germany's current asylum law. Several hospitals have already contacted Webers to tell him that they're interested in hiring them, as have counselling centres and even Berlin's health department. Mary, for one, is thrilled to be going back to work again.
I think it's extremely important that we work with refugees because we speak the same language and share their culture and background. And look, we've experienced the same things. We're able to help them better.
And yet, she says, she's desperately homesick.
Naomi Conrad reporting, and Wanjiku is now eager to continue with her social news.
Indeed. We carry on sharing your comments on the stories that we have aired and some on our Facebook page. And earlier on, we ran a story on Burundi where the president has hinted at running for a fourth term as president.
Yeah, Burundi has been in the news for a long time now.
Indeed. And we have patient Paul Ngoyi who says, if Nkurunziza always denies there was no crisis in his country, with the murdered Burundi's environment minister, Emmanuel Niyokuru, it is confirmed that the country is going wrong for its safety as well as for its survival. We also have another comment from Ehoza Godwin who says, I'm ashamed of the international community and the Western powers who are unable to bring this man to the ground. Is he that powerful? We now head over to Cameroon where Eric Maxim Chopu Moting has retired from Cameroon's national team and will not play at the upcoming Africa Cup of Nations. Well, the comments on that were quite varied. We have a comment from Boniface Onsano who says, all those players who are now too busy for AFCON 2017 should not show up for Russia 2018.
We are all looking forward to Africa Cup of Nations tournament coming up. Even me, who is not a football lover. I thank you so much, Wanjiku. I know that you have lots of comments, especially on football, but we have to leave it at that. For more news, visit our website, dw.com/Africa. I am Jane Ayeka-Kumet.
I'm Wanjiku Maura.